going, everyone out there listening along, and welcome back for another episode of the Rural Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Ulbrich with Ag Country Farm Credit Services, and today we'll be talking about what is labeled as America's greatest animal, the elk. Here to tell us all about the elk industry is Scott Gruen, owner and operator of Gruen Elk Farm. Welcome to the program, Scott.
Thank you.
You have a long personal and family history raising livestock. What brought you into the elk business?
I started as a hobby back in, I guess it was 95. I was raising hogs and stuff and decided I'd try looking at a hobby.
And how does raising elk differ based on your past experiences from raising the other animals?
It differs a little bit, but it all goes back to management and understanding what an animal needs. And whether it's cattle or hogs, I mean, it's, you know, feed and, you know, quality feed that you're putting into them. A lot of similarities to both.
And what type of operations exist within the elk industry? Obviously, there's many different types, and guys raise elk for different purposes. So can you walk us through what those types of farms or what the farms look like?
Sure. There's generally four basic areas that of income in the elk. One of them is breeding stock, bulls, cows, and that type of stuff. Also, there's an antler market, which is velvet and hard antler, demand for that. Shooter market, harvest preserves, and then there's also a meat market. So myself, I do all four, but there's some guys that just specialize maybe more in the meat side of it, or maybe just the breeding stock side of it.
Does geography at all play a role in deciding what type of operation guys run?
I'm not so sure that has a lot of influence on it. It's maybe more their preference. They don't maybe like to travel or don't. They enjoy the meat market type stuff, you know, farmers markets. You know, so that has a little bit to influence them on.
What would you say is the average herd size of an elk operation? And at what point would you say is a herd considered on the larger side? Just to give some perspective and some scale for those who are unfamiliar.
I'm just taking a guess here. It'd probably be around 50 is the average, maybe. Depends what area you're from. Minnesota, maybe 100 is on the larger side. 150, 200 even. But out west, you're probably looking at 250 to 500 head, you know, the larger operations.
With that many animals, what type of spacing is required? What's kind of the industry standard, or what do you prefer?
I would say that, like on our bull pen size, we like to keep, you know, that 20, 25 animals in a pen. We usually sort them for age. You know, we like to rotational graze, so we get them out in pasture. Wintertime, they're dry lotted. But it's, I know some operations, they pretty much dry lot the whole works. Then there's some operations that they might run 20 head animals on 20 acres, you know. So it's a little more free ranging type stuff.
With the elk being in the same family as deer and knowing how high deer can jump, I'm guessing there's going to be some special requirements for fencing to keep the animals obviously in. What does that look like?
Our state requirement is has to be a minimum of 8 feet, and they come out and check our fences and measure. You know, an elk is a pretty good sized animal, but I've never seen one go over a fence. I mean, they might go towards it, and at the last minute they stop. They just know they can't get over. So, I mean, I don't see any more than 8 feet fence being a requirement, and that's what our state enforces, 8 foot.
Is there any type of live wire?
You can. We've done electrical wire, and we still do. They really respect electrical wire. I mean, once you know what's there. It wouldn't be an option to, as an external fence, but as an interior fence or an exterior fence that is like double fencing would help. But they do respect electric once you know it's there.
And you mentioned rotational grazing before. What does the diet of an elk look like? Do you finish them on grain? Are they mostly out of pasture?
Well, they're actually really close to, we feed them just about identical to cattle. It varies from year to year, time of year. On the females, we try to get them on pasture when they're calving, and they'll run pasture all summer long, all the way up to the 1st of November. Their diet consists of just about anything that you feed cattle, from corn silage, beet pulp, corn stalks, alfalfa hay, grass hay. We prefer actually grass, alfalfa, mixed hay, and barley. I mean, anything you can think of, soybean hulls, oats. So, I mean, it's pretty much whatever cattle eat, but we also feed at different times of year. The bulls usually starting in February. We treat them like our dairy cows. So we start feeding them really, really good quality grain, top quality hay, grass mix. And we run them all the way through until they're done antler, growing antler, or we cut the antler off. And the cows, we treat them like stock cows for the most part. But once you get the calf out of the cow, we start graining them cows pretty hard. And we'll run that all the way through the breeding season. We take the bulls out by November 1st, and at that time we start cutting them back. And then we'll put them on corn silage and corn stalks, chopped barley, or whatever we're feeding. So it's a lot like cattle, but we just vary it to different sexes throughout the year, what they get. And the bulls, once they're done growing antler, they're pretty much treated like stock cows also, where they're getting a maintenance type feed. They're not pushing them real hard. One of the reasons we do that is that if we push them animals like we push beef steers for, you know, 8 months or a year, you know, an elk is going to live between, easily between 5 and 10 years, kind of hard on their system. So we kind of meet them in the middle, what their demands are and what we want out of them. But that's pretty much what we feed.
So that 5 to 10 years, that's the consistent lifespan of an elk?
I mean, we get cows that are older than that. We get 16, 17-year-old cows yet, but typically we don't keep bulls past, or the average age that we get rid of, we're probably 6 or 7. But we do have some occasionally older bulls that we keep around for breeding and stuff.
Now, based on that diet, it seems like a really hardy animal. Can you maybe speak to that portion?
I mean, Minnesota can't get cold enough for an elk. On the coldest days, they'll get up and just run. They'll just chase each other around the pen, and I think it's do that to warm up. I mean, but their hair coat is so thick, it just doesn't bother them. And they typically won't lay any place where they can't see. They like to get out in the open where they can see around. So for here, if there's a deer or a coyote or somebody riding a horse, you just got to watch the elk. They'll tell you what's out there. They'll see it long before you will see it. But it's just a matter of, you know, they're just a great animal for this environment. I mean, kind of like the buffalo, same way.
Now, you touched on a few of the different types of operations, but what types of markets exist for elk products? And are they domestic here in the United States, or does a lot of it go overseas?
Well, antler, or velvet antler, or hard antler, there's markets here and overseas, which would be China. I would say the majority of the antler, or velvet antler, goes to China. There are some guys that dry their own velvet here and sell it as capsules. There's a very good demand right now for dog chews, which is the hard antler. But we still export antler out of the country that's hard to China. That's probably the biggest markets out there. Meat-wise, there's guys that do a lot of meat. There's several companies out there that just buy trailer loads at a time, and they market that. So that's one of the markets that's always for an end product that you can always get rid of it.
Now, according to the 2016 elk census conducted by the North American Elk Breeders Association, there are at least 36,000 elk within the U.S. that are being commercially raised. Minnesota ranks in the top 3, North Dakota and Wisconsin ranking in the top 10. Many smaller industries such as this have some challenges. What would you say are some of those challenges facing the commercial elk industry?
I would say the number one challenge that we got is dealing with chronic wasting disease, which is called CWD. We have a lot of regulations put on us, movement restrictions. That's probably the number one. Outside of that, you know, disease issue is really a minor thing. They just don't get sick. I mean, we don't give, you know, antibiotic shots or something like that. We just don't have to do that. They're real hardy type animal. So I would say that's probably about the only thing that restriction that we have.
How important are state or national associations to industries like yours?
It's key to all our industry. I mean, whether it's Minnesota or any other state, just to try to get the regulations so that we can deal with it for moving animals. So they're a key factor in our existence.
We are speaking with Scott Gruen, owner and operator of Gruen Elk Farm. Now, the bull elk makes what I personally consider to be one of the coolest, most unique noises called bugling. For those listening who haven't heard it, here's a sample of what it sounds like. Scott, there are probably many things about this animal that are neat, but what is your favorite part about raising them?
I would say probably the calves, watching the bulls grow antler and seeing how they turn out, seeing how your genetics, when you breed two animals together, how you can change, you know, different parts of the genetic feature on them. That's probably the favorite things that I see in it.
Do you get to hear their bugles?
Too much. Now, this was several years ago. My wife was painting the door in front of the house, and this was late October. And they had walked down by the elk, come back. She goes, how much longer are they going to keep on bugling? We got guys 3 miles away that can hear them at night. So they bugle a lot. The more bulls you got, the more they bugle. So we just kind of over, you know, take it for granted. But we have people come out and just listen to them bugle at night.
It's a neat sound. But elk once roamed freely across parts of Minnesota, North Dakota, and Wisconsin. But those days are largely gone in this part of the country. However, in Wisconsin, they've established a couple wild elk packs within state parks. Is this an idea that you'd like to see expanded, or maybe the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association, would they like to see that expanded in states where elk were native?
I'm not exactly sure what the state status would be on that, but I think we do have concerns at introducing elk into the state that may not come from monitored herds, where to the same standard that we have to put up or deal with. I'm not so sure they'd be against it if they had the same statuses that we have to go through, just because of the chronic wasting part of it.
Now, are there many differences between a wild elk and an animal that's been raised commercially?
There is differences, but they're still the basic same animal. You know, you can change the influence of their antler, the way they look, just by raising them behind the fence. You can genetically change stuff. But it's basically the same animal, you know, for the last 100 years. I mean, it's all the same.
There are operations where the bulls go to trophy hunting. Is there a preference between commercially grown bulls or wild-grown bulls in terms of the whole hunting aspect of things?
Yeah, there's a preference on size. You know, different hunting ranches will take a different size animal. And some want big animals, some want smaller antlered animals. But the markets that we're really running into, from your medium-sized bulls and up, that's something they don't find in the wild hardly at all. So we're really not in direct, maybe, competition with different states. For instance, like Colorado's got a point restriction, and, you know, they got trophy zones out there where they're taken, and you have to have so many preference points to draw into these better units. It might take you 10 or 15 preference points or years to get that. And a lot of the bulls are going into those markets that, you know, if you want to shoot a bull that's maybe 350 or 400 inches big, it's pretty tough to do that in the wild. So we're kind of taking a market that's really not being, you know, used by the wildlife.
You mentioned chronic wasting diseases. Are there any other concerns for elk breeders at all?
Not really. I mean, you know, parasites, I mean, that's something we do a lot of control of. And it's the same medications that we use in cattle. I mean, wormers, the same thing. There's really just not a whole lot. A lot of the other, brucellosis, you know, that's kind of becoming put on the back burner. We don't have to test for it anymore coming into the state. You know, there was a TB thing. We still do the TB testing. We still have to do that every 3 years. Now they're thinking maybe dropping that back to a few more years in between. But we're not finding it. I mean, we're doing all the testing. It's just not there.
Now, given the family line of deer and elk, how do you go about keeping wild deer away from your herds?
What I try to do is put an electric fence alongside it, just to try to keep them more distance. Otherwise, there's just no possible way that, we never have them jump in or nothing like that, but they're in the general area. I know there's farms that can double fence, but every state has a different requirement of double fencing. Minnesota's like 2 feet. And then the next state, it might be 20 feet. So it's every state's got their own thoughts on what they can actually do. My operation, the double fencing just is not really an option. True double fencing, you know, when you're on the property line already, you just can't add to it. And at the price of fencing, it's a very expensive deal to them put two fences up.
If someone is interested in starting up an elk operation of their own, what tips would you have for them as they start their journey?
One of the things I would tell them is just talk to a lot of producers. Travel around, look at different operations, way they set up their operation, way they lay out the facility, runways, look at the genetics, what they're producing. You know, maybe put some goals in line. What would you like to do? Or you just want them just to have a few on the yard? Or are you going to try to make it, you know, a business out of it? There's a lot of different things. We see all different types in our elk business. And from making plenty of mistakes fencing myself and redoing things, we do set up a lot of properties for other people. And it's just a matter of looking at multiple operations.
Are there any places that people could go to find out more information about your industry?
I think you go to the state association. They'll have brochures, and they can get you in contact with a lot of different producers.
Well, Scott, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today and learning all about the elk industry. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That's Scott Gruen, owner and operator of Gruen Elk Farm. That's going to do it for us on this edition of the Rural Perspectives podcast, which is a production of Ag Country Farm Credit Services. To find out more, visit www.agcountry.com.